like I figured out a sketch of what needs to be done for this project. So I sent out yesterday a detailed plan of what are the kinds of experiments and what are the type of comparisons we need to make for algorithm.
Right, we should discuss that. But before that, can you update us on the setup?
The setup is solved almost. It's because I got the computer yesterday. I was telling me from since last week.
Okay, but what about the storage server that we...
Storage server is just... There was only minimal work on the storage server. It's just setting up a RAID and setting up a NFS server.
So that's done?
That's done.
So now you had to set up ESX on a couple of machines, or it's already there?
ESX is already there. NFS client on those ESX servers.
I see. So do you have to reinstall ESX to get the NFS client?
I don't think so. I was looking at some manual. I think there's some just enabling some options or something like that.
I see. Okay. So have you been able to do anything along that direction?
No, not yet. I just got the machine yesterday. And in the meantime, my Windows machine has crashed. The client which will access the notes.
Okay, so the client is running where?
Client is running on my lab machine.
Okay.
But I think it only runs on Windows machine, the VCR client.
Okay.
So, but my Windows machine has crashed recently, so I'm reinstalling those things.
Okay. Alright, so when do you anticipate to be ready to run some experiments, and, or at least test the feasibility as we had discussed last time?
I mean, if everything goes fine, I mean, it could be in 2 days or it could take 5 days, I don't know. Hard to tell, unless I start working, actually working.
But sometime this week?
Sometime this week, definitely.
Okay. Alright, so let's discuss this other thing that you have sent us. Maybe you can summarize for us what's there in this document. Do you have a copy?
No, but I remember it. So what I made is just this. First, I put some assumptions, like what are the assumptions that need to be, that is realistic in our setup. So I figured that because in any SLA curve, you have to make some minimum quality of service versus high quality of service.
Mm-hmm.
And so our goal is to like...
Sorry, can you be a little bit louder?
So I started with some planning some assumptions that should be valid in our algorithm. So the assumption is that any SLA curve will begin with a minimum quality of service requirement versus a highest quality of service requirement. And the SLA curve is how it changes from its minimum point to the maximum point. So my assumption is that at least the resource pool will have containing 3-4 hosts or whatever number of hosts we have, at least we can satisfy the minimum reservation of at least all the clients that are running that will run in the hosts or in that data center.
So I mean, I guess we can come back to that, but I'm wondering if you really need to make that assumption.
I think this is important. I mean, otherwise we cannot make any resource allocation.
I mean, let's say you can fit only 3 machines and you have 4 requirement. You fit the best 3, right? So you could provide the minimum QoS for 3 of the 4, and that would still work. I'm just wondering whether these assumptions are, I mean, we are sort of over-assuming or over-restricting our solution. Hey. Yeah, for the next half an hour at least. Yeah. Right. Okay, so anyway, we'll come back to that. Okay, so and then the next assumption is that the maximum QoS. So when you say maximum QoS, you actually mean maximum service level.
Maximum service level.
Because QoS is like an agreement, which could be based on many service levels.
Yeah, the maximum performance it is expecting.
Right. again, I mean, why do we need to
because
make these
assumptions? If we can satisfy, let's say we have 5 VMs and we have too much resource, and we can satisfy all the, even the highest service it requires for all the VMs, then our resource allocation algorithm is not at all necessary.
That's true. So you're saying that, but there may be situations where you take out a machine and you might end up in a situation like that.
Yeah, but that's a different case. I'm talking about when starting and the first deploying our set of virtual machines on a physical host.
So wouldn't our solution still be important for determining how much resource to allocate? It's possible that with the right kind of allocation, all the maximum QoS levels can be met.
Mm-hmm.
But how does someone go about knowing what those resource allocations are?
That we can use our VM sizing approach to get those required resources.
VM sizing approach, yes. But I mean, if you do not know, okay, you do not know whether maximum QoS can be satisfied for all VMs or not. It may or may not be.
Mm-hmm.
Can we use our work?
Then
to first determine whether it can be done, and if it can be done, how. If it cannot be done, what is the best we can do?
It can be done. It can be done. Like if you don't know how much resource it needs, then you can just run the machines on the host, and use our algorithm to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
What it needs to do.
Okay.
What is the best allocation for the set of VMs?
Right. Okay, just something for you to keep in mind, because I mean, we could do even without these first two assumptions, I think. Even if you don't know whether you can meet minimum or maximum QoS, you can still use this approach to determine if you can or not even meet minimum, right? And then if any of these cases is true, we still come up with an allocation, right? If we can meet all maximum QoS, we'll show you how to make the allocation. If we cannot meet all the minimum QoS, then we show you which minimum QoS you should be meeting, right, based on the total revenue maximization. And if neither of these cases is true, that all the VMs can meet minimum but not maximum, then we show you how to distribute the resources to get the most revenue. So just think about if that is possible or not, whether you can get rid of these assumptions 1 and 2.
Okay.
How you would. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm absolutely sure that we can get rid of these two assumptions, but I want us to go through that process of thinking and reasoning whether we need to make either one or two or neither of them or both of them.
Okay.
Okay, so then what's next?
The next step is just after that, what should be the comparison with our algorithm?
Okay, so this bootstrapping step, what does that mean?
Bootstrapping is like, first, how do you allocate VMs in the initial
phase? Okay, how do you do that?
So either you can do like in proportion to the maximum revenue each VM can is delivering, or you can do like maximum, like you can use more advanced, like you can use our VM sizing approach to figure out like what is the size it needs to get that maximum performance, and use that as a metric in proportion to the resource allocation to data center resource. So we can use either of these two, whatever is more feasible.
Or both.
Combining both?
No, not combining separately, but have two separate sets.
Yes. Yes.
Now the first one, I mean, saying proportion to the maximum revenue, would that be proportion for both memory and CPU?
No, I think SLF curve is not about CPU and memory.
But you're saying bootstrapping. What are we bootstrapping here?
Oh, yeah, it's CPU and memory in proportion to to the maximum revenue.
Okay.
Individually.
Yeah. Okay, so then the next thing is comparators.
So one is the proportional allocation, which is basically number one or number two, but it will stay constant. It won't do any changes. That's just a baseline approach. Like there is no feedback, so it will just do their allocation based on either bootstrapping in one or two,
or both, and separately.
Separately.
And I think we should do both separately.
Yeah.
Allocation proportional to the maximum revenue, or allocation proportional to the size that we prescribed, right?
Yeah.
The size for the maximum revenue that we prescribe. Okay.
And there is
In that case, we would have to make assumption number two, or maybe not. I mean, we would see realize when we do this second variant that, in fact, we can meet the maximum revenue for all these VMs, right?
Yeah.
The challenge I feel is the contention. The question of contention, how do we present that as an input to this?
I was thinking about that line. I can think that when I make the estimation of the maximum sizes, what I can do, I can use an average I/O latency level, like kind of a tolerable average I/O latency level, and use that as an input for coming up with all the estimation.
Yeah, I think we need to have a good, strong justification for what we do there. One argument to say would be, okay, let's assume worst case I/O latency or something that's close to worst case. So that's the worst, you know, that can happen. The average case is reasonable, except that not clear how we would define average case latency. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's just basically a median value. Let's say if
median of what set? What is the set of points?
Well, I am taking a 5 millisecond versus to 200 milliseconds.
Why did you pick that range?
That's how, I mean, individual, even though it's like, we can come up like that, like a VM running individually, how much the latency it observe anyway, without any competition.
Okay.
So that's the base case.
Okay.
And when a VM running with a high number of outstanding IOs in the same LAN, then we can think of that latency as the highest it could tolerate.
So now this would be a per VM number. For each VM, it would be a different number. The median?
The median could be a different number.
Because each VM could be doing sequential or random, and they would see different latencies.
Because the base latency it can have, it could be completely different. For some workloads, the base latency could be really low, and for some workloads, it could be really high. Even
sequential versus random, right?
Random, yeah.
When they're running in isolation, sequential latencies would be really low.
Yes.
Okay, I think that sounds reasonable. So you have a range of possible latencies for a workload,
yes,
given by either based on either running in isolation or in contention with a set of workloads. Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Kaushik. Did we lose you at some point?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I agree. I think that makes sense to have that range for each workload separately.
And I already have those ranges.
You already have those ranges.
Yes. Because we run those workloads in really high contention.
And zero contention.
And zero contention.
Okay.
So anyway, when you're creating models, you already know what range you put.
And those ranges are different for workloads?
Yeah.
They are.
The worst, it may not, because I'm putting a lot of contending outstanding random IOs, so it's kind of the outstanding random IOs
dominant.
So the worst may be similar, but the base case are quite different.
So the midpoint may be very close to the worst case, right? If you just pick the, say, the average between the maximum and the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to think more about how to pick from this range. Because if we average out the max and min, we end up with something that's pretty big.
It's going to be a high latency.
Yeah. So, what do we pick? We need to think more about this. What latency?
But I was thinking, like, anyway, you can. It's not harm to make more conservative assumptions. I mean, you can always trim it down.
Hmm.
But the worst case is that if we are not even maintaining the minimum SLA.
Right. Okay.
So in our sizing experiments, if we put high latency, it will just say that we need more memory.
Yeah.
But it's not very harmful.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So this proportional allocation is going to be based on that choice of the latency.
Yes.
Or
it could be very simple as just the number one, like in proportion to the revenue.
Or it could be, yeah. Okay. Now, to me, this seems more natural in proportion to the revenue. Okay. And then the next one is the brute force algorithm.
Yeah. We just considered all the possible combinations. Because we don't do it in our algorithm because it would be too much time complexity would be really high. But in brute force algorithm, we've looked at all the possible combinations.
Yeah, there. What I'm wondering now is that how do we take into account the contention in the brute force algorithm?
It takes into account the contention.
It does?
It does.
How does it predict what the contention level would be for a certain allocation? It considers all possible allocations, right?
It's not all. It's within the boundary of K. So within the K is our parameter. Like we are allowing only, let's say, 256 megabytes of memory change, or let's say 512 megabytes of memory change. So even within that boundary, it considers all possible combinations. It's not that it's considering from, let's say, 256 to 4 gigabytes. It's only considering 256 to 786 within that range.
Okay.
But in our algorithm, we are just doing it completely incremental basis, like let's say 64 megabytes, 64 megabytes. So it's not comparing, even with the 502 megabytes, all the 2 to the power 8 cases or something like that.
So we have three dimensions, actually two dimensions.
Two dimensions.
And we have 10 possibilities to change, like plus pi delta or minus pi delta.
Yes.
Along each dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 10 times 10 combinations times n, which is the number of VMs.
Number of VMs.
Is that all? I mean, is that, or, no, it's more than that, right?
No, you have number of VMs, and you have combinations of changes, so it's 10 cross 10. It's 10 cross 10 cross 2.
Cross 2?
I mean 10 to 100 multiplied by 2 also.
Where are you getting 100 first of all?
If you say 5 delta and 5 minus delta. So it's basically 10 and it's 2 dimensions. So 10 cross 2, that means 10 cross 10 to the power 2. So it's 100 combinations. And it's multiplied by number of VMs.
But you said 10 times 10 times 2, and I didn't
understand. I'm sorry, 2 is not the right answer, but 10 cross 10 multiplied by number of VMs.
Okay. Is that what it is? It seems to be more like for every possibility of the first VM, you have 10 cross 10 possibilities of the second. I think it's 10 to n to the power of 10 cross 10. Yes, Kaushik. We are trying to do some combinatorics here as to what the the complexity of the brute force algorithm would be. I think we've done this before. But I've forgotten.
I think it was done when I was there, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, can you revisit what we already... I think it is n to the power of 10 cross 10. Because every possibility of the first guy has 10 to the... 10 times 10 possibility for the second guy. Every possibility of the second guy has 10 cross 10 for the third guy, and so on.
So, it's number of n to the power of
10 cross 10.
10 cross 10.
That's what I think. But work it out carefully.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not. So it's really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I'm trying to
get. If I remember correctly, Sajib, you did the brute force implementation of the algorithm, and you did some comparison of the, at least theoretical comparison of the brute force versus this one in terms of gap and etc. for a workshop paper, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I did actually. Not the actual comparison, but I did the mathematical bound.
Yes.
And also the implementation, the algorithm of the brute force.
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember, that's fine, but you should really remember this, right? I mean, this is the only thing you're doing, you better remember it. Yeah, okay. So, let's move on to the next thing.
The next thing is the kind of experiments we want to show. So, the first experiment, I think we have talked about it before, is you start with the initial configuration and you show the what is the revenue you are getting at that interval, and based on that and keep applying the resource allocation algorithm at regular at the time interval, and each iteration you show that how the revenue is changing.
Okay, and what are we comparing this against?
Against with the brute force and the proportional allocation. The proportional allocation will be like a constant line, like a straight line almost, parallel to the x-axis.
Or this one, right? Either of these two cases.
Yeah, proportional allocation, but it should...
Those are both the initial states.
Initial states. So whatever revenue you get at the initial state, if you can think it as a revenue you can obtain by doing it static proportional allocation. But the better indicator would be how close we are with the brute force algorithm.
I'm concerned that we won't be able to solve the brute force algorithm.
It will be too time consuming to solve.
I think it might take 1 week to solve one of these things, just to run it through the possibilities. But anyway, this is something you need to learn yourself. Find out the hard way. Okay, so what are we plotting on the x and y axis here?
X axis the iteration count. And the y axis the revenue generated.
Do we have any indication of how the resource allocation is changing? I mean, do we show that somehow?
Because it's two dimension, it's kind of hard to show.
What I can show is the individual revenue obtained from each each application.
Oh,
or the performance. But the individual change of CPU or memory is kind of hard to show.
So he's looking at per VM revenue, how that changes, or
I think performance would be a better idea to plot.
Per VM performance?
Per VM performance. Because we can still confirm, okay, this no VM is violating this minimum performance requirement. So that's an important criteria. We don't want any VM to suffer minimum performance violation. Minimum performance guarantee. So what we can show that we are still, the revenue is increasing, but nobody is suffering, everybody is at least getting its minimum performance guarantee.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I think this is the most important experiment, is that showcases our tricky contribution, right? Okay, and the next one is local versus global. What does that mean?
It's basically there is no bound on K. So you're just doing, I'll do the allocation, you run the allocation only once.
Okay. I will see you at the, are you going to this, to the cafeteria?
Where?
Are you going to the cafeteria or somewhere else?
No, like we can go to the cafeteria.
I'll try and join you there as soon as.
Oh, okay. I'll drop these off. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Just in case. You probably don't want to carry them to the cafeteria.
Thanks. So sorry, what was the local versus global again?
Local means that because we are restricting our decision within a bound of sequence change of memory. So in global, we are not restricting it. We are saying that do it only once. So consider all the range from, let's say, 256 to 4 gigabytes of CPU instead of looking at a very small interval. Just to showcase our point that we need to do it in a smaller interval case because of the competing I/O.
Okay. And the competing I/O is assumed to be constant in this global case.
Yes, because it's not considering any feedback.
I'm wondering, maybe this should be the first thing to show up in this experiment, the local versus global.
Before coming to the main experiments?
Because the main experiments, we are kind of assuming that the local is the best, right? And then we show why it is the best. Or why global is not better. And if we show that local is better than global and then show how good local is, then maybe a more logical progression. Just my one suggestion, right? Something, just think about that. How do you order these experiments in a progressive fashion?
Okay. I think this is not because of the order of the paper. It's basically what are the experiments I'm first focusing on to get the results first.
I think even from experimentation point of view, it might be a good idea to do this because we might find something contrary to what we expect. See that global does really well.
Okay.
Right? And so
thinking about the global optimization, I mean, maybe what we're seeing is a drastic. Our initial assumption is that if we do a drastic change in each VM, then it might completely change the
performance
for the competing IO assumptions.
Yes.
I should mess up the model. Model cannot consider that.
Yeah.
But the thing is that the global model can still change based on the actual performance it sees.
It could, but will it converge is the question. It can move from one end to the other and keep moving all the time. Because it goes to a new place, finds, oh, contention is very different. Now I need to redo everything. Keep moving randomly, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be what we should show with the global thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing is with the local, do we, for instance, let's say allow changes, and once we make those changes, do we make any further changes or we stop there? And let's say plus minus k delta, we make a new allocation. And then at that point, do we continue to make changes or do we not, is the question.
Yes.
We continue to make changes. So we observe the competing IO again and then reallocate again.
If we need to.
Now, why would we need to? Need to for what reason?
Maybe what we observed is different.
Is different than what we...
What we assumed.
What we predicted.
Yes.
And that would be because of the competing IO changed substantially?
Yeah.
That's the only reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
But our assumption behind the local is to not let that happen at all, right? To restrict the scope of allocation so that this competing IO doesn't change. But I guess what you're saying is that it could still change.
Yeah, on next iteration it could, not on the same iteration.
After you make the reallocation.
After I made the reallocation. But on the same iteration, it's not considering what it has done previously. So
yeah.
It's basically starting from scratch.
Okay. All right, I think...
So we might see also, even in the local case, so I'm thinking that we might see a little back and forth.
Back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the global case,
more abrupt.
Yeah, more drastic
mm-hmm.
changes back and forth. I think that would be important to show early on. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably is one of the early experiments, the way I see it. You have multiple iterations of the local and multiple iterations of the global and see how drastic the changes are. And it's possible that the global does as well as the local, or it could be that our local is either too restricted or too flexible. Right? Maybe we might have to reduce the scope of the allocations. I mean, this is one of the things that we need to check what's going on.
Okay.
I think it's an early experiment.
Okay.
So the next one is adaptability.
Is you just include another VM?
Sorry, here the local and global, what are we showing, by the way? We're just showing the revenue achieved.
Yeah, revenue achieved. And also the convergence you mentioned.
And we're showing the I mean, can we have a brute force comparison here?
We can. I mean, but we need to have a brute force version on the global, brute force version on the local.
Okay. Okay. All right. We'll come to that again. I'm sure. The next one is, what is this about adaptability?
It's you feed another VM to the pool. You create another VM to the pool and start it running. What do you do at that case?
Okay. Well, since all your resources are utilized.
Yeah, every resource. So you need to take resources from. That's the key question. How do you take resources from to make initial allocation for the new VM?
Hmm.
Because the exclusion of a VM or the shutting down of a VM is easier. So you can just do. The extra use you can do just proportionally to everybody.
Yeah, but proportionally may not be the right thing to do, right?
At least for initial.
Oh, to start up.
To start.
And then we do the.
Then we do the run the algorithm again.
Okay. And. Well, I guess we could do this also in proportion to the current allocation of the VMs.
Taking away.
In proportion to the current allocation. And then run the algorithm.
Yeah, so what I was thinking is we might need to run our sizing algorithm there,
mm-hmm.
sizing framework, to estimate the minimum CPU and memory it requires with an average latency as the input. And then use that estimation. Let's say it figures out, okay, it needs 512 megabytes of memory and 1 gigahertz of CPU. So take 512 megabytes equally from each VM. To come up
okay.
with 512.
Mm-hmm. that seems like it's a fairly elaborate process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it's reasonable. I think there is enough justification to do that. It's going to be time consuming though.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see like how with the kind of experiments I did is like how can I still, I mean, not because we are not tackling the dynamic behavior of the application, but still keeping it out, how we can show the strength of our framework.
Yes, I agree. I think that's certainly the right way to go. Okay, so then you have something about overheads.
It's just comparing the brute force time and versus the our heuristic time.
Do we have any other sort of overhead here that we would like to bring up? Except the time.
Except the time to model, I don't think we have any other overhead.
I mean, for all these different experiments, there are different steps, right? Can we use just the time to model and compute all the, for instance, with the exclusion scenario, we have some time to size the VM, and then
that would be. I think it's in the staging area. We're not considering that in our case.
Okay, so given that the sizes are pre-computed.
Not sizes, minimum sizes, but the model is pre-built.
Even the minimum sizes could be pre-computed, right?
Yeah.
With a given latency average.
It can be pre-computed. You can think of it as a pre-computed.
So, then then the overhead is one iteration of the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
How long does that take?
Yeah.
And then I think the other metric is how long does it take to converge to the solution,
mm-hmm.
after which we don't do any reallocation. I mean, is that embedded in the rest of the experiments, or do we want to pull it out separately?
We have to pull it out separately. I don't think it's kind of embedded. I mean, when you show the iteration count, we can just mention that after how many times we are making those iterations.
Okay.
But that's a feasibility more of like how often you want to employ your algorithm. I mean, somebody will say 5 minutes or somebody will say 15 minutes, I don't know.
Right. Okay.
But one iteration of an algorithm is important because it's very compute intensive.
Yes, that's true. Okay, I think this is a very well done plan. And we should slowly execute on it. I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's just nervous on all the framework and implementation. It's a very robust implementation.
Yeah, I think it would be wise to plan this a little bit. I feel that you should start with the second guy, but intuitively I feel that way. Because that might give us some early feedback on what's wrong with global or whether we are thinking wrong. Right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a central piece. And if we spend a lot of time doing this other thing and then we realize that, you know, global is
good enough
and then, you know, where do we go next? Right? I mean, or how do we utilize all the rest?
I mean, our algorithm will still be valid.
It will still be valid, but
except that only the K will be the entire range.
Yeah,
that's the delta will be a little larger too, and that's the only change we need to do.
Yeah, but I think it is important for us to learn that early.
Okay.
Before we pick some, because for the first thing you have to pick some delta and some K, right?
Yeah.
And we are picking that and basically arbitrarily.
Yeah.
Without any knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if we do the second experiment first, we'll have a little bit more insight on how to go about doing that.
I have some basic idea based on my sizing experiment, like how I can arbitrarily choose what is feasible.
Yeah, you mean how you can intelligently choose.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you choose like 32 megabytes, it's not helpful. I mean, you won't say, the model won't tell you anything.
Question is it okay to use 1 gigabyte, right?
or 4 gigabytes? Is it okay?
It depends on the complete range. Because the kind of application I have, I mean, it's only valid for until 2 gigabytes of memory.
Yeah.
So it's operating on a very small scale. So in those cases, I think just 64 megabytes of change is okay.
Mm.
That's exactly what we used in our
sizing
framework. But when I'm looking at a huge application, which might need 10 gigabytes of memory, in that case, maybe we need to do a 1 gigabyte sizing.
Okay. Okay. All right, that sounds good. Kaushik, do you have any suggestions on this document?
No, I think I'm okay for now.
Yeah, I agree too that it seems reasonably comprehensive. It may just be a question of how you sequence and go through this, through these different experiments, right?
Yeah.
Certainly.
I think we have a plan, so I just have to plan how I can go ahead with the framework integration and all those implementation.
Right.
I have the algorithm ready, but I need some work to make it interface with the VSphere.
Yes, I understand. Okay, that sounds good. I think if there are no other comments, we should probably stop, and we can meet again next week. You have a talk.
I will update you.
You have a talk coming up this Thursday. Is it this Thursday or the next one?
No, it's
next Thursday. Okay. Yeah, I knew it was a Thursday.
I think this Thursday is Miguel's presentation.
Okay. All right. All right, Kaushik. So we'll talk to you next week again. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay.
All right, Sajid.
Okay, thank you.
All right.